Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Hyundai. Experience the 2011 Hyundai Sonata today at HyundaiSonata.com.
This is Out of Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 124 for October 27, 2011. Ashtrays and paper cups. Watch Out of Line After Hours live at AutolineDetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time or 2300 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Out of Line After Hours in the iTunes Store. Thanks, folks, for joining us again. And again, I've got my co-pilot and getting us through all this danger here, Mr. DiLorenzo.
John, it's another episode.
It is another episode.
Number 124.
124, and we know that because we were told that by Charlie Vogelheim. Yes. And Charlie's here, too.
That makes me the flight engineer, I guess.
Well, Charlie.
I'll be in the back serving the drinks and for the passengers if you need me.
That's great. And you got to bring us that West Coast viewpoint, too, of everything that's going on here in the industry.
Boy, when I find out, I'll let you know. But let's see what we do in the next hour or so.
So where are you now? Because, you know, at first I thought, oh, yeah, Charlie, that'll be great to have him on the show, you know, because he's been in radio, but you're not doing radio now, right?
Right now, I'm just no.
That's right. And then, I thought, well, I'll put these down with J.D. Power. No, you're not with J.D. Power now.
Well, you make it sound flighty.
No, I'm just trying to explain to everybody this great background that you bring to the party here, so to speak.
So 20 years at Kelley Blue Book, and then I was at J.D. Power for five. I worked with the Motor Trend Auto Group as the editor of IntelliChoice. And I did just last month at IntelliChoice, we announced the Motorist Choice Awards at the Orange County Auto Show, International Auto Show, in beautiful Anaheim, California, in the shadow of Disneyland. And, it's a big market.
Well, he's
market
got the Chamber
show.
Of Commerce snog lying down,
well,
doesn't
it's,
he?
You know,
well, it's a big market show, but
the LA Auto Show is coming up here in a couple weeks, and that's really, you know, it's almost like, you know.
Did they have to throw the word international on it, or?
I think they did. I think they just, you know, it's a big thing. It's like the airport in Traverse City or something like that. Recently I've joined a great little software company, and it's called Response Logics. But as far as consumers are concerned, you know what? These car companies do a great job in building these cars, engineering and designing and developing. And right now the consumers are shopping through these vehicles, and they're really depending so much more on the internet. It's been around 17 years now, and everyone's doing that. So, the auto industry is a little bit disconnected from how consumers are used to doing the shopping. We just spent 9 days in Las Vegas, the industry, on a number of digital conferences, and somebody's giving me a hard time. So is that the code word for spending time in Vegas now, a digital conference? But it really is about, delivering to the consumers what their expectations are. And we've developed some software. So the three things that people are looking for when they go online, they want to know a quick response, is it available, and how much does it cost? And that's really, you know, for
this
anything.
This is perfect. You're a perfect guy to have in this conversation, because the thing we got to talk about is this latest consumer report. Quality, you know, rating of cars and new brands that came out. And Peter, I don't know about you, man, but I'm calling it to me, it's so bogus what's going on.
It is
here.
Bogus. I mean, I haven't, you know, I'm not a Consumer Reports believer. I never have been. I know there are a lot of people out there that idolize Consumer Reports and go by them for their car reviews. And I'm sorry, there's a bigger world out there. And these quality reports, they're shaky.
Well, you know, my whole thing is I think Consumer Reports actually does a really good job of testing and evaluating cars. I'd stack them up against any of the buff books, really, in terms of their knowledge and their, you know, the depth of testing they do. But when it comes to ranking the quality of these cars, I say it's not statistically valid. Yeah, you shouldn't read a whole lot into it. Yeah, it's interesting that You should look at all sources on quality, but I can't believe how the media just kowtows to whatever they say and really doesn't look behind the wall at the methodology. And that's where I say it's not statistically valid at all.
So the report just came out this week, and I was there for the press conference that they announced. And again, every year, the reliability study, which says, you know, which again, they combine the ride and drive experience at their own test track, which is, again, a beautiful facility. And they say that they do the survey, 7 million, I think, they send out to 5 million people, and they get about 1.3 million responses.
Mm-hmm. Which is a massive response rate.
It's huge. Having been at J.D. Power and IntelliChoice, I can speak to that. It's a big number. But was there a car that stood out for you guys? It just, you're going, wait a second, that's better than that, or that's not as good as that? Or I mean,
no, my whole objection to their methodology is that any statistician will tell you that you have to take a random sample of the universe, in this case, the universe of car buyers. They don't. They only go to their subscribers. So it's automatically a subset of that universe. So my analogy is, imagine if the New York Times went out and did a poll of who the next president of the United States is going to be based on their subscribers. Everyone would say, well, that's totally skewed. That's not representative. And not even the New York Times will do that. It does go out and finds a statistically valid random sample across the country. And guess what? It doesn't take a whole lot of people for them to be plus or minus 3%, and they're generally pretty accurate. But when Consumer Reports says, hey, we're only going to survey our subscribers, nobody calls them out on it.
The interesting thing for me, and witnessing it, being here in Detroit when it happened, certainly you have the Detroit-based automakers there, and they're focused on in the presentation, and Ford and General Motors and Chrysler.
Of course, they have to be. It's highly influential. I don't deny that at all. It's the most influential survey and magazine out there.
But the aspect of it that I found interesting, and so let's, if you don't mind talking about just the fact that so many of the problems had to do with the infotainment systems, the interaction between us and the electronic devices we're relying upon for our sound and navigation and stuff, and instead of the elements of driving, braking, steering, you know, acceleration and things like that. I'm not blaming them for that, but again, those types of vehicles that are having a problem are not based on the dynamics of driving, and I'm troubled by that whole thing.
No, I don't think that bothers me. I mean, you know, if...
Well, that's like that old J.D. Power survey that first polled Hummer H2 owners, and Hummer finished last because the H2 owners complained about fuel mileage. Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so you bought that H2 thinking what exactly? So I don't know.
But, you know, here's the real thing. If you went to those H2 owners, and if you ever talk to Hummer buyers, they are into their Hummers.
Right.
So if you went to them and said, do you love this vehicle? Oh, man, I love this vehicle. What's wrong with it? I don't know. There's nothing wrong with it. Well, what's your biggest complaint? Oh, it doesn't get good enough fuel economy. Okay, that's what we're going to grade this on. But if you ask those owners if they love the thing, I'll bet you $1 million they did. And probably the vast majority of them didn't care about gas prices. They were just going to drive what they wanted to. That's why you buy a Hummer.
Yeah. Well, going back to the Consumer Reports and some of the questions that I even asked afterwards, having been in the as a statistician or an analyst, is again weighing the different aspects of it. You know,
mm-hmm.
Again, certainly an interface on a navigation system is troubling, but certainly not as important as whether the car will stop safely or not. That type of thing. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Jen, you're right. The media just goes, the new media universe we live in, I mean, these surveys blow up and it's like, oh, it's the end of the world. And then, you know, 2 days later, there's something else.
It's gone.
I don't know. It's just, so Ford gets marked down. Chrysler comes back from the dead and they get, oh, it's wonderful and everything.
Well, here's the thing is, you know, they said one of the reasons why Ford went down is it came out with three new models, and I can't rattle them off the top of my head, but it was like the Explorer and the Focus, and maybe it was Fiesta too.
Well, and they have the MyTouch system.
That was the most of the problems with
right.
the MyTouch system.
But what they said is, oh, you know, this is the first year and they have a lot of problems. That's why at Consumer Reports, we always say you should never buy in the first year. Then they go, hey, look at Chrysler. Chrysler rocking it up the charts. Why? Because they had all this new stuff out. They had the new Grand Cherokee, the new Durango, the new 200. So on one hand, they're saying Ford's bad because it came out with new product. And then they turn around and say, and Chrysler's great because it came out with new product. So that's where I say there's no consistency here. I don't buy their quality ratings at all. Their testing, their evaluation, you betcha. Their influence, no question. But this is, somebody's got to call them on it, because I just can't believe the amount of attention the media heaps on them with no one saying, wait a minute, how do you come to these conclusions?
Yeah. Well, let's not forget that some members of the media are lazy. So if a story like that lands in your lap and it's 10 o'clock on a slow day and you got nothing, and you got your editorial meeting in a half hour, it's just like, I love this survey. I'm going to write about it for the rest of the week.
So just going over some of the, you know, and again, if you go in deep on it, which we're not going to have time to do, but just aspects of it, do you ever peel it back? I mean, and so you're talking at a real high level, and I was looking at a couple of the things there, and, you know, kind of agreeing with the concept that the challenge for the automakers going forward is getting graded on this infotainment mm-hmm. interface, mm-hmm. which is a troubling item in the car. I'm you know, you imagine the amount of time spent at a dealership where these salespeople have to explain things for an hour, and it all looks fine when you're parked there, and then once the vehicle's moving or in traffic and things aren't working, or you're trying to do voice recognition and it's having an argument with you and all those different things with it, it's just kind of crazy. But it's troubling for me, just the aspect, you know, right or wrong, that I agree with the concept that this is how people are judging cars now, is just on the volume control on the radio being easier not to do. Just driving the Scion outside here
right.
the other day.
No, there's no question. And I agree. You've got to put a lot of attention on this infotainment system. In a lot of cases, this is the point of sale for the customer. Yeah. You know, the car just comes with it. They want that infotainment system. But I'm not objecting to them putting so much emphasis on it whatsoever. But you also have to look at it, because what the research shows is older buyers are the ones who especially don't like this. And you can ask a 30-year-old, what do you think of the Ford Sync system? Love it, would not have a car without it. And you can ask a 60-year-old what they think of the Sync, and it's like, oh, this is a little bit complicated. You know, I'm not sure I really like, where's the knobs here?
Yeah.
And both are right for what they need and want. But I'm just saying that there's I'd love to know the demos on Consumer Reports subscription base. Does it tend to be overwhelmingly baby boomers who may not like infotainment systems, this new electronic stuff? I'm just curious. I don't know what that is.
Yeah. Well, you know, as you have that iPad in front of you there, what a great interface that would be if you just had a plug and that became, you know, your IP or your at least your infotainment system, because you know what's on your own system and you know how to operate it and you're used to it, and that just goes into the car and moves on.
I'm amazed we don't see more of that already.
Yeah. And I think we're going to see.
Yeah. We will, but, you know, the technology keeps moving apace, too, and the interfaces keep getting better. And while Ford's being excoriated for its Sync right. interface right now, they've got these great buttons on the dashboard, on the steering wheel, that are probably the best in the business for interfacing with the system.
Well, it's their MyTouch, which is really the one that's tested poorly.
Mm-hmm.
And they're fixing that. So
remember years ago, General Motors had an actual dial on the steering wheel that you could move your
CTS
thumb around.
CTS had that.
Yeah.
That was one of the greatest features.
I like that.
I loved it. Yeah, and I told the Cadillac people don't get rid of it, and they go, well, you know, they had some mealy-mouth answer. I thought it was one of the coolest things on a car.
Audi's got the little scratch pad. The scratch pad. I like that. Where you
now, we should explain what that is if anybody didn't know that.
Who's driving the S4 outside?
I am.
Yeah.
Have you used that? Have you tried entering anything with that little right pad?
No. Nope. It's
a little writing pad where right next to the gear shift lever, right?
Yeah.
And instead of, you know, if you want to put in an address for the nav system, instead of turning a knob or pushing buttons, you just literally write it on the
numbers
scratch pad.
And letters. And it'll
and
even
it's
do...
amazingly fast.
It is. And it'll even do Asian characters if you...
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, you're kidding.
if you know what your Chinese restaurant looks like, you can just, you know, either that or if you just, you know, hit it hard or something, it'll take you there.
Hey, we got to take a break. Okay. I know we're going over, and you know, we got other things that we want to get into. I especially want to talk about some of the earnings reports that have been coming out today and the day before. But, Ben, we got to thank our sponsors, and right now we especially want to thank our friends at Bridgestone.
Look at this. Bridgestone's using natural rubber, researching ways to enhance its quality and performance, and making their factories more environmentally friendly. Producing products that save on fuel and emissions, and some that can be reused again. And promoting eco-friendly and safety driving campaigns. One team, one planet. Bridgestone.
So, I don't know if you guys have been following the earnings that have come out, but wow. Peter, I mean, Volkswagen, these guys set a goal of being number one in the world by 2018. I think it's going to happen in 2011.
Yeah, and the thing about it is when is the last time a conglomerate juggled all these balls in the air and was ruling the world, and it was General Motors in the late 50s all the way to the late 70s, except Volkswagen makes what General Motors was juggling seem like, you know, child's play. I mean, what Volkswagen is doing, and hey, and I said it, it's just like, you know, you start wanting to be the number one manufacturer in the world, automaker in the world, you're going to get problems. But I will say this, they have been absolutely brilliant at keeping their brands focused, distinctive from each other. And they let them, you know, they let them grow. And then it's the behind the curtain stuff where they save all the money and, you know, and it's just amazing. I mean, the money they're making and, you know.
I mean, it was jaw-dropping. I think for the third quarter, their profit was up 45%. I mean, this is not what you hear of in the auto industry. No. This is what you hear in, you know, the electronics industry,
right,
or, you know,
kind of
some other sort of leading-edge technology, yeah, kind of a thing. This is a very mature company that is just, I'm blown away by their numbers.
Well, clearly, you know, 4 years ago it wasn't going so well, but there was a buildup. They were putting all these systems in place, and they were getting to the point, and then it's just like, bang, here it is. And obviously, the success of Audi in China is just ringing the cash register at a tremendous rate.
And that's been at work for some time. I mean, they're not new to that. I mean, the Audi is the town car of China to a certain extent.
But did you see where the Chinese government is saying that all the officials have to drive
no more foreign cars?
Well, and they reduce the engine size,
right,
that they can buy.
And how much money they can spend.
And it's just like, you know, and I forget what news program I was watching, but they interviewed some typical Chinese man on the street. And they asked him that. It's just, this is not a good thing. Basically, so what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know,
obviously one of the guys who gets one of those cars right now.
But that was
that
just,
could hurt Volkswagen and Audi in China, because I think they sell a couple of, I shouldn't say, I'll just say it's tens of thousands of cars that they sell to
government. Well, it's going to hurt all of the import manufacturers. But what was even more disturbing is they, on a social news note, they're reducing entertainment programming.
Yeah.
To like 1 or 2 hours a
right.
week.
No, and they want to control the media.
And it's just, you know, we said on the site, it's like, well, that'll drive people in the showroom, because if they can't watch TV or anything, let's go drive around in the car, you know.
Yeah, you know, we see them growing, and we see them certainly doing a bit of, you know, certainly the number one automotive market in the world.
But
at the end of the day, they're a communist country. And
at any point, they could say, okay, ding, 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 thank you very much.
Yeah.
Remember when we had that you, in order to do business here, you had to have a joint venture? Well,
exactly.
We're dissolving that.
Yeah.
We're nationalizing everything. Goodbye. Thank you.
We can. Then that was when you were saying about how they need to have their own brands. And even Volkswagen, you know, Volkswagen kind of came in as two separate companies, half of the cars with one and half with the other on the joint venture side. And I don't know how they're peeling back or identifying that, but they certainly have their own cars.
But the Volkswagen Group is just, it's staggering.
It's staggering.
And top to bottom, to your point, I mean, from the Seats to the Lamborghinis and everything.
Well, Seat's not making money, I don't believe. I haven't had a chance to go through the numbers, but it's been losing money.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, you know, look, Volkswagen doesn't sell a whole lot of cars in North America. They're just getting going on that journey. The point being is that they get Seat turned around, they start really selling cars in North America. The number of that, we're all going, ooh, look at this today, are going to be nothing. They'll make a whole lot more money.
I mean, Audi is clearly their star. I mean, they
no doubt
just
about
their
it.
Profitability is with Audis, and they just keep pouring on the good stuff.
And, you know, that's a really good point, Peter, because when you look at the rankings of automakers right now from a revenue and a profit standpoint, Ford and GM are starting to fall behind because Cadillac is not where it needs to be globally, and Lincoln, don't even talk globally. It's not there. And I think if they don't get those brands turned around, they're not going to be, you know, in the top 2, 3, 4. They're going to be in the top, 4 through 7.
Well, I mean, obviously, GM's got the XTS and the ATS coming. And, you know, Ford.
I understand. Yeah. But I'm saying is, Cadillac doesn't hold a candle to Mercedes, BMW, or Audi because they sell globally. They're, what are they all at? A million units? Is there a million Mercedes, million BMWs, million Audis, something like that? It's got to be close to that.
Yeah.
And Cadillac's what? Not even 300,000, I don't think. Imagine if Cadillac could triple its revenue and profits. Now you're talking. And Lincoln, same thing.
And what I'm still interested to see is again, in this post-world economic downturn market, as General Motors has, shaved off, the Pontiacs and the Hummers and Saturns of the world and now can focus more, what does that mean going forward? I mean, obviously, they couldn't turn the ship that quickly. So they do have a luxury brand. They have a luxury brand that is world-recognized in the form of Cadillac. Now they got to do something with it. And Audi, the successes weren't necessarily, again, short-term. This has been...
Oh, yeah, long-term planning.
Audi made a plan 12 years ago.
Right.
And they stuck with it. And that's something that's absolutely foreign to... domestic automakers.
Today's just, because you're right, when GM was great, if you go back to the 50s, if you look at their organizational structure of GM of, say, 1955, it's very similar to Volkswagen AG of today.
Exactly.
Very much. And you had people like Alfred Sloan still on the board who did look long-term. He'd been on the board 30 years at least at that point. And so that's what you see lacking in American companies. And it goes... It starts at the board of directors. They set all the direction. And if all they are people who really don't know anything about the automotive business and ergo just look at what the financial numbers are, they don't make good long-term plans. They don't accept, we're going to lose money on this Audi brand until we get it straightened out. But once we straighten it out, watch out.
They don't understand that in this country. And Audi said, we cannot... survive by being perennial number second tier to Mercedes or
BMW.
Right. We cannot, that's not a sustainable model. So what do we have to do? This is about 12 years ago. And they said, we are going to step up our technology. We are going to step up our R&D. We're going to spend the money. We're going to lose our asses on this for quite a while. Oh, and by the way, we're going to go spend upwards of $100 million a year
on Le Mans.
Right. And we are going to race until we win, and we're going to keep winning. And,
prove it to the world.
And this was 12 years ago, and we're going to stay on this plan, we're going to stay focused, and eventually it will work. Well, guess what?
It did. And just focusing on the German manufacturers, I mean, when you talk to the youth or, the younger buyers, and again, even in the mid-30s, the aspirational brand is Audi. I mean, it just is right now. And I'm looking for the BMW, being out in California, certainly, 10, 20 years ago was either the BMW or Mercedes was certainly in the play. So I'm waiting to see, because they built some wonderful cars, but Audi's the brand of...
it's the hot one right now.
Well, I think, and BMW is right there. I think Mercedes is the one to worry about. But, let's imagine if you were in Dearborn right now. If I was doing a presentation to the Ford Motor Company board, I'd say, you have to stay committed to Lincoln for the next 12 years. This is no short-term ride here.
Right. Don't look for a return.
Yeah. This is going to take
a long... Not in your career,
long,
you older guys.
Yeah, this is going to take a long time. And if you're not prepared to do that, then don't do it.
Right. But as I'm pointing out, if they don't do that, this is where the family's got to step up, because the family is the long-term interest in the company more than any other shareholder. They're the ones who have got to say, we got to make Lincoln. They got to crack the million-unit code at some point.
Well,
how do we take this brand globally and sell a million of them?
Well, again, then you look at it, you know, again, just using Audi as an example, you look at the scope of the product line there, and then you think of Lincoln, and there aren't coupes, there aren't supercars, there aren't, you know, there are certainly sedans, and there were the truck-based or SUVs, but...
Well, the MKZ, the new one that's coming, is the new Lincoln.
Then it's a good sign of things to come.
It's a great sign of things to come, but then they have to come really with a cadence after the MKZ. That's right. One hit after another after another.
Right.
So it's going to be a tough road.
It is. Hey, another company whose earnings that you got to keep an eye on is Hyundai Kia.
Oh,
when you put these two guys together, wow, I'm stunned.
Remember what I said? And I forget when I said, but I said...
Remember everything you said.
They will
Good
be...
thing you do, because Peter doesn't.
Yeah. What I said? They will be the number one Asian manufacturer in the United States within the next 3 years. I believe that.
They may be the number one company in the world before this is over. I was just looking at the numbers. We're going to do this on daily, probably not tomorrow, probably Monday. But Hyundai Kia right now are number six in the world on a revenue basis. Number six. On a profit basis, they're number three in the world. They're now more profitable than the Ford Motor Company, which to me is stunning. So it goes Volkswagen, General Motors, Hyundai, Kia. This is through the first 6 months. We got everybody's data in the world on that. And wow, I'm blown away.
Again, working very hard. There's a real value story there. When you see the product at the price point that it is, it's loaded. It's got a lot of story to tell. They've come out not only with the California design centers that both Hyundai and Kia have, but they've got some great worldwide designs coming forward with some of the cars. And you know, they're very attractive. They're different. Some are polarizing, but they're getting attention in that way. But then, again, the package is there. That was a company 3-5 years ago that was making the same claims that Volkswagen was. They were, sending these sales demands here, even in North America, and everyone's going, really? You think? And they've been marching along. And anybody, again, in this part of the country that didn't pay attention to them better now, because they came out of a great adversity. They came into the country strong. They grew right away, and then they had some
fell on their faces. Well, because they came out with crap cars.
Well,
is that the technical term?
I'm not an engineer.
But yeah, and then they backed it up with the 100,000 10-year.
Well, they had three problems generally, and we've talked about them. They had quality, and then they had driving dynamics,
right.
And the third component is design.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They've started to address, they've addressed quality before they were ready to. They put that 10-year warranty on. They weren't ready for that. That cost them a bundle,
yes.
I'm sure.
Yep.
Again, it was investment in the future.
And then dynamically, they're getting better.
They're not there.
No, agreed.
They're still not there. They still don't get it. They don't want to go the extra mile, even though I'm sure there are engineers within the company saying, we got to do this.
But it isn't across the board. There's some cars that are there for what they are, for the price point, and then there are others that aren't.
Well, the thing is, and they refer to it within the company as Hyundai speed. They're so fast at doing things. I think their cars will get there.
Yeah.
But they're so fast to market that, they are probably cutting corners. But I've been impressed how they'll just design on the fly.
Well, third component design is now they went out and hired some of the best designers in the world, and now it's starting.
Kia, too.
Yeah. Right. And the
beautiful design centers.
Stuff's starting to hit the market.
And they're making big money. And what's more impressive, too, is, Volkswagen and General Motors, GM's got big pickup trucks and SUVs, massive profit margins in North America. Volkswagen's got Bentley and Audi and Lamborghini and blah, blah, blah. But Hyundai and Kia. I mean, that's what it is, you know? And so, they got Genesis and they got Equus too, but those are small numbers. The vast majority of their cars are B and C class cars, and a lot of their growth is coming in emerging markets.
Right.
But they are making the money, and that's what everybody should be studying. How are these guys doing it?
And again, to your point, not just North America, not in our market here. And they're building cars here, don't forget, but also in the emerging markets, in Asia throughout, and in South America.
They're booming in China.
Yeah.
And the Veloster is probably going to be another hit.
It appears to be.
Styling-wise, it's really fun to look at.
Yeah.
Dynamically, as we talked about, the car, I don't think, is quite there. NVH and, you know, some, you know, sound deadening and all that. It's not all that sophisticated, but it's a great car to look at. It's different with, you know, those three doors, two doors on the right-hand side of the car.
So what about, you know, and again, unless you're next on your list, but, you know, Toyota, which obviously went through some the troubles last year.
The troubles. Well, hold on. We'll get back to that in a minute, because let's take a break before we get into another topic on that. But, Ben, we got to thank our good sponsor friends at Chevrolet. The Chevrolet Cruze is the car that is taking the world by storm. And a key reason is all the equipment that it offers. A driver information center, a USB port, ambient LED backlighting on the dashboard, remote start with a MyLink app, two accessory power outlets, one in front and one in the back for the rear passengers, OnStart turn-by-turn directions free for the first 6 months. Whew, there's just too much to list here. And you can check it all out at Chevrolet.com/cruise. So what were you saying, Charlie? Toyota?
Well, again, you know, here's a car company that was number one in the world or pointed in that direction, and then obviously had a lot, you know, had some issues with combination, you know, from within, you know, North America-based acceleration issues, which were questionable.
Toyotas had no problems at all.
Right. I agree, totally. And then,
I shouldn't say at all. We know that there were some floor mats that would bundle up, and there were some sticky pedals. We know that. But gremlins in the system that made it accelerate out of control,
Gamma rays. Yeah. But again, and then you throw in a tsunami and the terrible tragedy of, you know, the earthquake and things like that. Now, again, not going to be happy about just letting things happen, I guess. You know, but at the same time, you wonder, you know, be careful what you wish for, because when you're number one, obviously everyone's pinging at you. So,
well, Toyota's mistake was they took their eye off the ball. They became obsessed with being number one.
Yep, exactly.
And there were certain upper management at Toyota who decided we are going to be number one at all costs. They added new plants. They started producing vehicles outside of the Toyota comfort zone, which didn't perform to their levels of quality. And then things started to go wrong. And then you add the financial meltdown and this whole, well, the sudden acceleration, that was just, you know.
Well, that was totally bogus.
Yeah. You know, but culturally, they had a meltdown internally.
They did.
Then, you know, the tragic circumstances of the natural disaster there just, you know, wiped them out. But, you know, today I had like 8 emails from Toyota. I mean, they're all in at the
SEMA.
I mean, they've got more Scions and Lexus, Toyota. I mean, they must have 50 vehicles there.
So the two parts are, number one, are there lessons learned that Volkswagen better keep an eye on? If they're going to be number one or charged for that Hyundai even. And then number two is, you know, if Toyota was there, and they're not going to give it up without a fight, and I don't mean to say that
Toyota's not going away.
No.
So you can't not talk about number one without mentioning Toyota.
No, you can't. But, you know, this brings us back to the Consumer Report stuff, too, where, you know, 2 years ago, Toyota took a big pratfall in the ratings because of all the unintended acceleration. And all of a sudden, you know, all the subscribers went, everybody else thinks Toyota's bad. I better fill out in the form that they're bad. That's why I say that this quality rating is nothing more than a popularity contest. And now, you know, Toyota's, you know, sort of holding steady. It's fallen down from where it is. And now Ford just took it on the chin. And anyway, We talked about that already.
We talked about
Well, the thing about...
Hey, calm down, Don. Take your medication.
The thing about being number one, you know, it's simple. Focus, consistency. If Volkswagen can keep it up, you know, they might have a long run at the top.
But remember, too, and that's what I keep pointing out, Audi runs itself as a totally separate company. It has its own board of directors, its own annual report. That's the same with SEAT and Skoda and Bentley and all the way down the line. And that's like, that's not quite, you know, that's even better than how GM did it in the 50s. But as you know, in GM of the 1950s, if you were the general manager of Chevrolet, you were essentially the president of a car company.
Yeah.
And that's how Volkswagen does it.
You were as powerful as if you ran your own country.
Yep.
And, you know, when they were running on all cylinders, the board of directors was smart enough to stay out of the way.
That's right.
You know, but...
Hey, jumping topics completely. We got to bring this up. One of our readers decided that he was going to design the new Mustang, but he didn't just do it out of the blue. He looked at the Ford Evo's concept car. And we know that there's a lot of Ford Fusion in that, but we also know, Peter, right, that there's a lot of Mustang in
the design.
Well,
I think it's the first half and half concept car.
Because from front and back? Or
well, it's
side?
Not even a B-pillar, because the B-pillar is sort of non-existent, but you cut the car in half.
The back.
Yeah, the front gives you a real strong hint of the next generation Fusion, only the Fusion is striking, I mean, when you see it. The back is of a sport-type car that's pretty reminiscent of a Mustang.
Pretty reminiscent.
And then there's another concept car that Ford did that I wasn't aware of. It came out of Australia called the Mad Max. Or I probably knew it, but I forget it because I don't know why. So many concept cars come out, I forget them so easily. It's like jokes. I could never remember them either.
Yeah.
But, Ben, let's bring that picture up because this guy came up with what he thinks is the next Mustang.
So, the challenge was something like that. They did such a great job.
There it is.
For the last one.
Now, all the smoke signals we're getting out of Dearborn and London about the new Mustang coming is that it will not be retro, which I'm thankful for.
Yeah. This drawing that we got up on the screen right now is not retro.
No. I mean,
if you look at that, it's a very European-looking car to me.
Why so?
I don't know whether it's just there's something about the sloping of the hood there that just gives it that look. And maybe, you know what I love, the headlights on that. You know, headlights for so long, you know, were regulated, and they could only be at a certain shape. And I'm just, it's the eyes to the car, and it's
right.
Just subtle differences whether it changes like that. Just,
well, you know, so I'm sure directionally, you know, this is sort of in the direction, but Ford has made no bones about the new car is going to be new, which I think is
necessary.
Absolutely essential.
If the Mustang's really going to live on in perpetuity,
it has
to get with the times.
Yeah, yeah, well, you need to write a new chapter and attract new enthusiasts to the Mustang.
And don't call it a Mustang, too.
No, don't call it a Mustang. This thing where lighting is going on these cars is amazing. I mean, BMW is talking about frickin' lasers on their for headlights. So.
I know.
But it's a subtle difference.
Good.
I mean, you just see a little bit of some changes in the jewel-like settings in the front, and it's almost like... It's like a person you're seeing, you know, a little sparkle in their eye or something like that. And you're going, it's amazing how, again, all of us are so eye conscious, and that is the eye of the car.
And I think it was Ben, who was that? Scott Sweeney? Sean Sweeney.
Let me look.
We got to give credit where credit's due.
Yeah.
Since we used his drawing.
Well, that one,
when
the new
the
one
show.
Comes out, and then people go to the dealer, you go, wait, this isn't the one that I saw.
I want to buy this one.
Yeah, I want to buy the one that I saw. Don't recognize me this one. So
it was on After Hours. Pretty, it must be good.
Yeah, but Peter, I just want to ask you, because, again, I get going away from retro, and I agree with that, but they almost needed to do the retro version to reset it, to you know, as you say, you can look at the heritage of a car almost like the branches of the tree, and sometimes the branch grew too low, and it should have continued along its lineage a little bit more before it branched out. And it's an interesting concept, Mini going forward. How are they going to do that? They've done a pretty good job maintaining.
Look what VW did with the new Beetle. I mean, the new Beetle.
Yeah.
I love
it. Really good.
I love, I mean,
But it's more retro, almost. I mean,
well, I don't think so.
But it's along the lines of the profile. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
But it's
the longer hood, and it's more than the...
Yeah, but I don't see it as retro at all.
Well, if you squint, there's 50s Porsche from a three-quarter
rear.
That's
what I think.
But I mean,
call it Bauhaus design.
But once again, and we tell viewers this all the time, we go to these shows... And you see the cars under the lights, you don't know what they look like until they're on the road.
Yes.
Moving.
Yes.
And the new Beetle that John had it the other night is striking on the road. It looks totally different than the current one.
And inside, too. I mean, the inside is very simple, but very elegant, too. It's a well-done car. In fact, we're all talking about car of the year. What's this? I think the Beetle could be a sleeper. I'm kind of surprised it hasn't gotten as much attention as I think it should.
You had that silver one, and it was a kind of a lousy night, misty night, and it looked great.
It looked fantastic in that light. It did. There's something about that rain mist on it. That's where, you and I were talking. It looks like it could have come out of Porsche's studio.
So here's a car, again, iconic in North America. You know, many of us learned that's where we learned to drive a clutch and was the bug down the street. and it comes out completely stylized in its last iteration. And now, to me, when I say it's going back retro, I mean it's going back more reminiscent of the bug that we remember with a little bit longer hood instead of the concentric circles, so to speak, in the design point. But again, more of a North American car. Is there a life for that beyond our shores here, do you think?
I don't know.
For the Beetle?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think there is because, the last one was a little cartoony in its proportions.
Well, they showed the R at
the Frankfurt show.
They showed the R model.
And it looks like, Autobahn approved.
Yeah, yeah.
It looks good. And I think that the Germans, or the Europeans especially, but the Germans will set the pattern for Europe. Now I think they'll look at it and go, this is a serious car. It's no longer just a cartoon. There's design to it. It's properly planted, it can go. So I think it's going to gain credibility. I think sales, not so much in the U.S. market, but elsewhere in the world, because the just prior generation didn't really sell very well elsewhere.
Again,
the U.S. was the big market.
Even the Beetle itself was more of a North American success than the rest of the world.
And that was just hippies getting back to their roots.
Well, they said, they consciously went for more skewing male on the new car, but... They did much more than that.
Took out the vase.
Yeah.
But the visual impact is much more than just skewing male. I mean, forget that. I just think it's a much better car.
I totally agree. It really is.
You get asked about the Mini a lot. And again, the Mini was a real iconic design back. I mean, it was car of the century by some measure at one point. It comes out and definitely a modern version of what it was. So now we have the Cinquecento, the Fiat 500 that's coming. Mm-hmm. And having lived in Italy, I'm very fond of the old Cinquecento. I'm curious to see how that's going to do. And it's a cuter version of it. But again, even the North American version, they had to make different than the European version. Right. Had to make it a little bit wider.
Heavier.
And a little bit, yeah, unfortunately.
Slower.
Unfortunately, all of those things. And so I'm curious.
I'm just afraid of the 500, which I happen to like. I think it's cool. But I think it's the first on the block syndrome is going to run its course pretty quick on it. Mm-hmm. And I've been writing about that because the dealers are really apprehensive because they're looking at their watches saying, that's all I have to sell. Until they've got a crossover coming, but that's, when's that coming? And then the alleged alphas coming, and these dealers are sitting on one.
They should just call the new alpha the alleged.
That's,
we've been talking about that for decades.
I mean, I like the 500, but that, if I just plunk down a million or two on a new Fiat showroom, hoping on alpha.
Studio. It's a studio.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Excuse me. But I'd be.
No low-cost brand can survive on just one car.
No.
You got to have Mini.
Yeah, but Mini is not exactly low-priced. I mean, they have a very attractive base price, but, what's the average transaction of a Mini? I'll bet you it's 10 grand over the base price.
Yeah, I was going to say anyway. Well, I'm just saying, compared to this 500, it's, more.
Total blend with Countryman and, yada-da-da-da.
Yeah.
What's a base Mini these days? I don't even know.
You said there wouldn't be a test. 17?
I don't even know.
20? We can look it up.
We'll ask the chat room to look it up.
I think you can buy a
Somebody
strip.
Do the work.
Yeah.
I think you can buy a strip mini for under 20. Well, under 20.
Oh, yeah.
I'm thinking.
17,
right.
18.
Yeah,
but I'm just saying, I'll bet you the average transaction. I bet 26, 27.
Yeah, 25 to 27 grand, yeah, sure.
Hey, we got to take another break, and then we got to come back and see if there's any questions for Rapid Fire.
I have one.
Ben, we got to thank our friends at Hyundai for being such great sponsors. Hyundai is known for the great value that it offers, but let's not forget about the technology. The Hyundai Sonata is the first vehicle in its segment with standard integrated Bluetooth hands-free phone. It's the first vehicle in its segment with factory-installed HD radio technology with multicasting. And it's the first vehicle in its segment with XM Nav traffic and XM data services. That, plus NHTSA's 5-star overall crash test rating and the IIHS top safety pick, explain why the Sonata is selling so well. And you can check it all out at HyundaiSonata.com. All right. It's that great part of the show. It's time for Rapid Fire. Ben, start it.
Somebody's going to pay for that.
Okay, Goggles Pisana wants to know, so why does VW, you know, we were talking so much about Volkswagen. He says, so why does VW insist on giving North America a rebadged Chrysler Magic Wagon instead of a retro microbus? Why do they hate us? No Scirocco and a cheapened Jetta and Passat. Volkswagen hates North America.
Oh, nice. I like that. You know, I'll tell you what. First of all, I loved the Scirocco when it was around. That was such a fantastic car.
One of the coolest cars, breakthrough car.
Oh, my gosh. That was a blast. And actually going up at the end of this press conference on Consumer Reports, the Rutan, was the worst ranked car I think I saw as it flashed by, and I'm going, you know, this is one of the faults of a survey like this, or at least that you have to deconstruct, is if somebody's moving from a Volkswagen into this product, their expectations are going to fall way short because it's not what they want it to be. If they're just trying to stay within the brand, it isn't the brand that they're thinking of. Well, why didn't we get that microbus that we all wanted?
Well, and Volkswagen has hinted that they are bringing that new concept eventually here.
Right.
They've been hinting that.
Well, they blew it. I mean, when they showed the original concept, which was...
In Detroit.
Right.
2001 or something like that?
2000? 2000. They should have just said, we're doing it.
And in fact, if you look at the new one, and I can't remember what the name that they're giving it right now. Chat room, help us out.
Yeah. We need answers.
Yeah. Yes.
The bully. Very good. That harkens way back, right back, I should say, to that concept they showed in Detroit a decade ago.
Yeah, but it's 7/8 scale of that concept. It's
yes, it is.
Smaller.
I know.
Right.
But the design cues are all the same. It almost looks like a cat with whiskers, the front end graphic of it.
Yeah.
The smaller green.
If they get that to this market, it will be huge.
Right. So, no, Volkswagen doesn't hate North America. And, you know, all my colleagues, too, are, you know, pissing all over the Jetta and the Passat.
Exactly.
I just had the Passat, man. I liked it a lot. I had one with that V6. What is it?
Well, you had one with all optioned up.
All optioned up. But, I mean, I'm telling you, I think it's a 3.6-liter V6.
But if you're going on price point,
That engine sounds
great. You do anything with a TDI in it, and you're going to be, you know, happy camper. But there you can get a base that again is unfortunate that it's,
well,
you know,
base,
it's a price point.
The difference between the base Jetta and the loaded Jetta is.
But here's the deal, because we had Browning on the show, you know, at our Frankfurt webcast, and what turns out is that if you don't have a low base price. You know, people go on the internet and they do all the comparisons. You're high end, boom, you get knocked off the list. So anyway, they lower the base price. That puts people on the shopping list. And the transaction price really hasn't changed.
Right.
So people go in and they go, oh, yeah, well, you know, I do want Wi-Fi or Bluetooth, and I do want heated seats, and I do want this and that and the other thing. And so the transaction's the same, but they kept on the price list. And, you know, Jetta sales are up 60%. You know, Passat sales, I don't even want to quote it because it's up a stupid number because the prior one was so low.
Who were you imitating there? Was that a friend or a neighbor?
Yeah,
or
but man.
It's a new voice in the middle of my head. Okay, we got another question. Dr. Botox wants to know. He says, sorry if it's been asked. I joined late. He says, Jeep is the most dependable new domestic nameplate. Hey. When did hell freeze over, and why isn't it more widely reported?
Guess I'm not buying it.
I don't buy it either.
I don't buy it.
We don't buy that survey at all. But Jeep is rocking and rolling in the marketplace. It's really impressive.
The new Grand Cherokee, all of the models. Trail rated. You've got cars that you wouldn't expect to take off a dirt road can do some phenomenal things off road now.
Hey Ben, we got a phoner. Let's bring that in.
And before I bring that in, we did get the answer to your question on the base price of the Mini. Starts at
$20,200. Oh, $20,000. Wow. Didn't it start?
Yeah,
way 16 and change when it first came out?
Yeah, way back when.
Okay. Okay, let's bring in that phoner, the first one.
Hello, this is Mel from Michigan here. I personally had the 2011 Ford Fiestas and the 2012 Ford Focus for work. And one of the Fiestas actually doesn't even drive when I put it in the drive day after I pick it up from dealership. So it's not just Ford has a quality problem with my Ford Touch and my Lincoln Touch, but they have a problem with the newer PowerTech transmission as well as some other quality concerns they have.
Wow.
Well, that's,
gas in it?
That's the consumers are not, they're thrown off track by the double clutch transmissions. They just don't get them initially. Once they get into it, they sort of grow into it. But that is an issue that Ford is hearing. Mm-hmm. There's a sort of a ramp up that consumers have to do with these double clutch automatics, and people have, not only they have a short attention span, they have even less patience.
Well, the only thing I'll say is, I was just in Hell, Michigan last week for the North America Car of the Year test drive evaluation, and we were going through a bunch of Ford Fiesta or Focuses, and the dual clutch transmission works fine out on the open road. But if you're doing a lot of stop-and-go driving, coming to a stop and accelerating, the way they've calibrated it is it upshifts very quickly. Boom, 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 first, second, third, like that. And so if you're stopping and going, you're getting this joop, 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 and slow down, do, 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 joop, 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 do, do, do. And they've done that deliberately to try to eke out as much fuel economy as possible. I believe it's a calibration problem. And I say it's not a problem. They're trying to get the max fuel economy. But people aren't used to hearing all that shifting going on.
It's disconcerting. They don't get it. But when you hammer it, it's good.
Oh, God.
But you bring
it's fun to drive.
Yeah, you bring up a great point in terms of priority. And, again, at that point, the cafe or the fuel economy on that particular vehicle is going to outweigh the tactile feel of the drive shift points.
I believe it is that, just like we talked about with the the Volkswagen Passat and Jetta, if they didn't lower the base price, they weren't going to be competitive. It's not just base price, it's fuel economy. So that's when people do their side-by-side comparisons online when they're shopping.
Right.
Oh, you're low on the totem pole with fuel economy? Boom, you're off the list. So all automakers now are calibrating their car for that last little bit to try to bump their number up.
Yeah.
But the drivability is suffering. A lot of Chryslers are suffering from this, too, especially. So we're running into this problem here where, we're trying to get people to buy the car, or the industry is trying to get them to buy the car with this Uber calibration that really sucks from a drivability standpoint. And then people get the car and they go, oh, I don't like the way this drives.
Well, that's where you with the electronic transmission, you flick it to, smooth mode or high mileage mode.
Yeah. But now this guy was saying he got in the car, put it in drive, and it wouldn't even go. I'm not sure what's going on there because, I'm not going to question what he said.
Well,
but
we're not one
did he
of,
pick it up at a dealer? I mean, don't they do prep?
Saying.
How'd they get it off the trailer?
We're not one of those. We're not one of those tech talk shows. So let's move on.
Right. Glenn E. says, my daughter likes the Kia Soul she is driving, the black car. So the joke in the house is, my daughter has a black soul.
Did you want us to repeat that to everyone right now?
Let's see.
What's her name and how do we tweet her?
Yeah, Jeff W. says, what source or survey do each of you think is the most accurate in measuring vehicle reliability? Obviously not Consumer Reports.
As a guy that worked at J.D. Power and has seen Consumer Reports, and we even did, you know, information from IntelliChoice, you got to take them all in. I appreciate your guys' emotion on the whole thing, but to me, it's just a matter of not taking it at face value, trying to deconstruct it if you can. Unfortunately, sometimes you don't have the opportunity to do that. But to understand, even as simple as, you know, when Buick owners love Buicks and Volkswagen owners didn't rank them as high, sometimes it's just the age difference, you know, the tolerance level of the drivers. And you say, well, why do, you maybe it's an older crowd driving a Buick, and this is, you know, in years gone by. Buick's making some fabulous cars now, so I'm not trying to continue that. But as long as you understand that the younger perspective, you know, might be harsher on a car than an older perspective, and then judge it accordingly, but you have time to deconstruct all of the surveys
right.
that way.
Right.
And that's
No, nobody does. But I like the J.D. Power Vehicle Dependability Survey that's after 3 years of ownership. I think, though, you got to look at a number of things. Who is it? Strategic vision does more of a things gone right thing.
Right.
What people really like about their cars. I think some sort of combination of that. And I'll tell you, one of the best measures, although the data is very hard to get your hands on, are what are residual values? That tells you what the marketplace really wants. A car with high residual values, and then you got to look at it as a percent of its original transaction
exactly.
price, blah, blah, blah. But that's the best way. That's the marketplace
well,
telling
again,
you this is a good car.
Well, again, that's what IntelliChoice did, was its cost of ownership. And it's not only, you know, which is part of the residual value, but it's also, you know, wear and tear and repairs on the vehicle. The other thing that J.D. Power did, though, that was good is to separate what was a problem or what was a design flaw. Because sometimes things don't work because it broke,
right.
and sometimes things don't work because
they weren't designed
They weren't designed correctly.
Yeah. Yeah. Great point. DC Auto Geek says, here's what I don't get. Porsche fell 25 spots in the CR survey. Ford fell 10, but all the headlines say Ford is slammed. What gives?
Again, the Porsche one was an interesting one. I'd love to hear your press prospect. I mean, here are owners that, for the most part, take a lot of pride in their car. And it's just like you were describing in the beginning, John, where they say, well, do you like it? Yeah. Well, and Porsches, for the most part, are I don't want to say hand-built, but certainly a lot more than assembly line, per se. And they're so personalized that it was surprising to say, were people admitting that it was having problems? Were there changes in it? Because, again, it seemed to me that when the Panamera came out, for instance, they were ranking very high in a lot of the surveys, and people were very pleased with it.
Well,
the only issues
ironically,
were...
Ironically, ended up the Panameras had a spate of quality issues.
Yeah.
At introduction.
Mm-hmm. So whether people first out the gate were saying I made the right choice and they're shy to admit that there were problems, and then after two or three times that there is a problem, now they're going, okay, this is starting to eke into my own time schedule. And so finally, they're admitting to issues that may have been there all along. So therefore, and I'm just explaining the fall in that point. Maybe they were too high to begin with, so the fall.
Well, the point I think he wants to know is, why is Ford getting the negative media and Porsche isn't?
Yes, it's just,
well, because, you know, that's what this country's about. You know, Ford was the comeback story. They didn't take the money. They're an American car company. They're trying hard. And then, you know, the press and the media was, you know, Ford's doing great. They've got great products.
Time to tear them down.
It's time to slam them. And, you know, and the earnings, Ford earnings, they just said, it's amazing when earnings come out because one media outlet would say, doomsday at Ford, and the other is just, yeah, it's pretty good. All things considered, it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's a very solid performance.
Yeah. And I'll just finish off by saying, again, Porsche is, again, I was always frustrated having a part of these, you know, comparing a more hand-built car to an assembly line or a high-volume vehicle. So it's sometimes a little bit of an apples and orange even having them in the mix. But you're right.
Hey, we got another phoner. Ben, let's bring it in.
Hi, guys. This is Jeff Leischek from Albany, New York. My question is, Ford has been taking some lumps for the shifting of its new dual-clutch automatics, but VW also sells dual-clutch automatics in the United States, and we don't hear as much noise about them. I'm sure you folks have driven both models, both Fords and VWs, and my question is, does the VW transmission really shift better than the Fords? So there's some truth to it. Or is Ford just getting a bad rap because it sells so many more cars in the United States? There's just a lot more noise to it. Thanks.
Well, we cover this, and so we'll keep this short. But I actually think that the buyers that are buying these new Fords are domestic buyers.
They don't even know what a DCT is.
Yeah, they don't understand.
They just got an automatic.
I mean, a lot of the Volkswagen...
Volkswagen people are going in and saying, I want the DCT.
Yeah.
It's a totally different mindset from the buyer.
Yeah, so I think that plays heavily into this.
Yeah,
so
I agree totally. There's some calibration
stuff,
too. Is there
anything
to
talk about? CVTs, that doesn't even come up that much. I mean, Subaru makes them. There's not a lot out there,
CVTs,
but I know. I was waiting to hear that.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, we had Jack Hollis here last week, you know, with the Scion IQ, first car ever in the studio. I've just had one to drive for the last week, and it's got a CVT, and I'm sorry, the CVT sucks. Now, I'm told outside of the U.S. market, you can get it with a manual. I'll bet that is a killer car with a manual transmission in it.
Yeah, fun.
Because I like the rest of the car, but CVTs, the cheap CVTs, because if you get into some of the higher-end Nissans, for example, they spend the money to do the programming or whatever it takes, and they feel pretty good. Same with Subaru.
Yeah.
You know, the Impreza, it's not that it's invisible, but it's a whole lot less noticeable than in the Scion IQ I've just been in, or last week I had a Nissan Versa. You know, they do what I call the lowing cow routine. You accelerate them and they go, they sound like cows out in the field.
Nice. I guess that tells us.
I hate the sound. We're in Michigan here, boy.
Right.
Okay, Mitch W. For Charlie V., it's so easy to find complaints about specific cars or dealers on the internet. Do consumers pay attention to these negative comments to a significant degree?
Yeah, and again, this is one of the things that dealers need to understand is so much even about cars or the buying process. You know, keep in mind, you know, J.D. Power had the sales satisfaction. You know, we know that there was there's been issues for years dealing with dealers. We're getting away from that as we move away from a push economic model. Quickly to your answer, yes. People are looking to their peers for information, not only what to buy, but where to buy. And it's becoming more important than even some of the, as you would say, the professional or the reviews and things like that. So, and dealers are getting wise to it. If people are talking on whether it's Yelp or Dealer Raider and things like that, you need to take care of problems or complaints in right away because people are listening to each other.
Yeah. It's a new wired world out there.
It is. It's social media. And again, unfortunately, it makes everyone a critic, an unfiltered critic, unlike somebody like you that is highly filtered. And
I want to be the Rolls-Royce ghost owner who gets a survey and says, you know, my ashtray is full. I'm pissed.
Now what do I do?
It's that old Jackie Gleason line. I knew a guy who was so rich he bought a new car because the old one was parked in the wrong direction.
I'm out of Cohibas and my ashtray is full. Yeah. I hate this car.
Well, hey, we ought to wrap it up, but Charlie, cool having you here, man.
Hey, thanks.
I have one more coffee.
Oh, you do? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't notice that had come in. Yeah, let's bring in another call.
Hey, John. Rick from San Diego.
All right, Rick.
With the GM with their Buick and Cadillac. I think they got Buick aimed at Audi, which, by the way, is a competitor for Mercedes-Benz and BMW, if you ask Audi, and which is what Cadillac's trying to compete with. I think they have Buick set up too high in price, which is stepping on Cadillac, which hurts both of them ultimately. If they would drop the Buick price level a little bit, I think the sales volume would increase quite a bit without really hurting its ATP numbers and give Cadillac a lot more room in the market to properly position its vehicles and get its sales volumes where they need to be. And on the ATS, I think that's going to be a key model for Cadillac as it's about a million unit global sales segment with the 3 Series, C-Class, et cetera. Comments? Thanks.
Well, here's the thing. General Motors jettisoned divisions, and yet they're still doing the same thing they were doing. Now, when I wrote something way back, said ultimately GM should only sell two cars, two brands, Chevrolet and Cadillac, because they can't seem to rectify what's going on. Like, for instance, GMC makes that Acadia Denali, which is a great package. Reimagine that as a Cadillac, it would be great. But, you know, for them having to start figuring out, well, where does this Buick go? And wait a minute, we got the ATS. You know, it's the same stuff all over again.
Well, they had to make Buick because it was so popular in China.
I get it.
So they had to keep that. But you go all the way back to Oldsmobile. There was a time when the Oldsmobile was going to be the European version of General Motors. And as John Rock was running the company there. And then the Caterra comes out, and that becomes the Aurora becomes an Oldsmobile. And that should have been a Cadillac. And the Caterra maybe should have been an Oldsmobile. But you have the complexity of a dealer body that again, are relying on product to come, and you have to deliver on the promise there.
I can fix this tomorrow.
Do it!
And it's real easy, you know. Who runs Buick? Nobody runs Buick. Buick is just a brand. It's not a car company. Buick is a brand. And they matrix in different people from design or engineering or so it's real easy. Do what Volkswagen does. Create the house of Buick. Create the house of Cadillac and of Chevrolet and GMC, and give them their own design, engineering, and manufacturing.
GM's not going to do it.
They're never going to do it.
They're never going to do it.
They're never going to do it.
Because there aren't visionaries there running the company who can see that, you know, those guys were pretty smart back in the 50s and 60s. Now, they're not going to do it. They've got a bunch of people on the board who shouldn't even be on the board of your local hardware store.
Well, again, not to pick on General Motors. I mean, certainly Chrysler doesn't do that with their brands necessarily.
No, but you know,
they don't. But you know, look, they don't do it quite the right way. But they've taken a huge step in the right direction by creating the CEO of the brand who has full P&L responsibility for that brand. It's not the true house concept. Right. But it's a big step in the right direction.
You've got to share some of the engineering. I get you don't want to go to badge engineering by any means.
No.
But, you know, one of the great things.
So what if you have duplication? No, you should have duplication.
One of the great things Chrysler did was cut down their number of V6 engines. What did they have, 7 at one point?
That makes sense. I agree. Yeah. But,
except, you know, you try to sell an Alfa in this country that's supposedly this Italian mark, and it's got a Chrysler V6 in it. I don't care how good that V6 is. It's not an Alfa Romeo. It just is not.
No, you're right.
It won't break down enough? Or?
You're right. No, they need to, even Fiat's got to do this. They got to reestablish the house of Alfa. And guess what? On paper, it's not the most efficient. If you look at Volkswagen and the number of people that they got to build their cars, you go, what? These guys are not efficient. Yeah, but they're making more money than anyone else. And that's part of the secret of how you make this multi-company within one umbrella corporation work. You've got to have overlap. But, you know, MBA think will not allow you to do that. But I'm sorry, that's the price you pay to have all these different brands like Volkswagen does and have them really work. And guess what? At the end of the day, despite having too many people and overlapping responsibilities, you make more money than anyone else.
Yeah, and the interesting thing to manage that when you think about, again, just the question about how there is overlap between Buick and Cadillac now, if they were house of and there was a sweet spot where, you know, the consumers were going, obviously they'd both be focused on that to some degree. So it'd be an interesting thing to have to manage even if it was rolling along that way.
And one of the best things about Audi and the way they do it, they've got too many people. They spend a lot of money on marketing, on advertising, on media launches, on everything.
And when they do it first class.
They do it only
one. They don't scrimp. They don't go, oh, you know, if we went to paper napkins, it would be a lot. No.
Oh,
they do it right.
I'd love to do a shout out to Audi. They just did a sponsorship on the Best Buddies in Washington, D.C. this last weekend, raised money for developmentally disabled partnerships in the Best Buddies program. And they go first class all the way on that. And they've been supporting that for years. And my hat's off to
because
them.
Because that's the thing that domestics still don't get. You know, you have to not waver one bit. You cannot cut or scrimp or anything because everything you do is part of your image. Everything. So if you even if you go to a press preview, And they, you know, they went to the paper cups and say, I mean, it's just everything. And Audi does not miss
right.
a beat.
I agree.
Paper cups. Paper cup holders.
Hey, this is a good time to wrap it up. So, okay. I'll say it again, but Charlie, good to have you here.
Hey, it's great to be here. Yeah. Thanks for having me. It's great to be back here on the East Coast.
Peter, great seeing you as always.
John, viewers, thank you very much.
Very good. And don't forget to Facebook friend us, folks, at facebook.com/Out of Line Detroit. Twitter us at twitter.com/Out of Line. Or follow Peter's stuff at autoextremist.com and at twitter.com/autoextremist. Charlie?
Hey,
any place to look for you at?
Well, I'm just I'm out there and I'm doing some work making sure that the consumers are connecting with the product that they want to in the way that they expect. Because you know what? Whether it's you're a dealer or the bank or the OEM or the consumer, nobody's happy till the deal's done. And then so anything I can do to make that
cool,
I'm there.
And we're on Facebook too, Auto Extremists.
Auto Extremists. And I want to remind everybody next week that Tuesday night we've got another episode of Open Line coming at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time with Chelsea Sexton, Michelle Naranjo, and Aaron Bragman. So check that out next Tuesday at 8 o'clock.
I might just show up on that.
Yeah.
Bring an electric
check
car.
Us out at outofline.tv. We got a new look to the website and a new video player. And folks, thanks for having joined us this week.
Visit our website, outofline.detroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily automotive news fix with Out of Line Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Out of Line Detroit. That's all there and much more at autolinedetroit.tv.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Hyundai. Experience the 2011 Hyundai Sonata today at HyundaiSonata.com.